welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Hey, welcome back, folks. Thank you for joining me for another week and allowing me to be a part of that week. This week, I have a brilliant guest. He's just a great guy all around. You know, his philosophy, his personality, everything about him. You know, I really connected in this interview, but who am I speaking about? Well, I'm talking about Øystein Pettersen. Well, Øystein is a very familiar and famous name here in Norway. But for those international listeners who may not know him, well, he is a Norwegian professional athlete known for his achievements in cross-country skiing. Now, he was born in 83 in Lørenskog, Norway. Pettersen began his skiing journey at a young age, displaying exceptional talent and determination. Now, Øystein's career highlights include his participation in multiple international competitions, including the Winter Olympics and the FIS Nordic World Ski Championships. He specialized in sprint events, showcasing his speed, agility, and technical prowess on the tracks. Now, one of Øystein's most notable accomplishments came during the 2010 Winter Olympics held in Vancouver, Canada. He secured a silver medal in the team sprint alongside his teammate, Johan Kjølstad, contributing to Norway's overall success in cross-country skiing. Now, throughout his career, Øystein consistently demonstrated the versatility and endurance, excelling in various sprint races. He also competed in the FIS World Cup circuit, regularly achieving top rankings and earning podium finishes. Now, beyond his competitive endeavors, Øystein is recognized for his sportsmanship and dedication to the sport. His passion for skiing and commitment to his training regimen earned him respect from his peers and fans alike. As a beloved figure in Norwegian sports, Øystein's career has left an indelible mark on the world of cross-country skiing. His accomplishments serve as an inspiration to aspiring athletes, highlighting the importance of perseverance, skill, and a deep love for the sport. Now, off the tracks, Øystein is known for his down-to-earth personality and involvement in various charitable initiatives. He's used his platform to support causes close to his heart, contributing to the betterment of society and giving back to his community. Now, today, Øystein, well, he continues to be involved in the world of skiing as a coach, mentor, and ambassador for the sport. His legacy as a remarkable athlete and role model stands as a testament to his remarkable career and enduring impact on the sport of cross-country skiing. And so, without further ado, let's slip into the stream and meet Øystein Pettersen. Well, I think Norwegians pretty much know who you are because you've won several medals and in cross-country skiing and such. But maybe for our international listeners and those few Norwegians that haven't heard about you, maybe you could introduce who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. That's, like you say, perhaps I'm most known for being a former professional skier. I used to be a cross-country skier. I don't consider myself as a skier. I'm just a guy who's really curious about what people who are good in achieving stuff really do. That's really who I am right now. I'm a lifestyle entrepreneur. I heard someone say, and perhaps I am, but I think I'm just a curious guy who really likes being around people and learning from people. Yeah. That's pretty much who I am.
I mean, you've had a life as a top athlete and such. I was wondering maybe we could, you know, we don't have to go into your history, Øystein, as all the professional accolades that you've attained over the years, but perhaps maybe you could speak a little more to what you do presently and who you work with and such, and we can start there and see where the conversation takes us.
Yeah, that's good. It's typical because the people really have a tendency of wanting to hear histories and wanting to hear a lot of the secrets. But I find it's first of all, no secrets. And second, it's, I find the mechanisms behind achieving, they are all the same. If you are going to be an Olympic champion, or if you're just going to be a good mother, father, or you want to achieve something in business, the mechanisms are quite similar, and the steps are all the same. Perhaps what the steps contain is different, but the mechanisms are all the same. And I think it's this is what I do right now. I really do love, even though I'm not skiing anymore on a professional level, I'm still working with the same mechanisms every single day. And that's, I'm really passionate about it, and I'm really curious. So,
Well, those mechanisms, I think maybe we can explore some of that, because as you said, there is pretty much a recipe for a particular mindset to move forward. And for me, it requires some sort of discipline. It requires some sort of dedication, a level of that. And everyone kind of gets this logically, but I think what happens to a lot of us is that we have an emotional hangup. We can't cross that. There's a misalignment between what we logically want and what we emotionally want to do. And at the end of the day, emotions rule what we do, our behavior. And though it is a very clear-cut recipe per se, if we can call it that, I mean, how do you help someone, or how do you help yourself move from that to get emotional alignment to enact those specific skills to move forward, to succeed, to find resilience?
That's you're saying so much interesting just in the first question. Like I'm full of enthusiasm here. First of all, from my perspective, results are consequences, right? It's consequences of the choices you take and the actions you make. And I think everyone needs to be aware that you need to take actions in order to achieve something big. But the actions you don't take and the choices you don't make will also influence the results you can achieve. So that's like how I look at life. Results are consequences of choices you take or not take and actions you make or not make. But you said feelings, for example, and yes, feelings rules a lot of my day. And I think feelings rules a lot of most people's days. But I've seen that the people I've been around who's achieved the most, they don't let the feelings steer what they do, but they let what they do steer how they feel. So I'm really conscious about not letting my feelings steer what I do, but to move it the other way around. What I do will affect how I feel. And that's a huge difference. It's the same thing, but it's a huge difference. And I think everybody needs to be aware that either one you choose, you will feel the consequence. So I'm doing and then feeling, not waking up feeling and then decide what to do.
At the end of the day, we've spoken many times on this podcast about what emotions are, what feelings are, and from sort of a neuroscience perspective, I know we come from two different disciplines, but I think a lot of our philosophies and our practices have overlap. And so for me, feelings and emotions have always been this chemical recipe of hormones, modulators, and transmitters. And there's no good or bad emotions. They're just emotions. They come up, but they are chemical messengers from our physiology to our psychology that something's going on. And it's just to be attentive to it. And for me, for the longest time, I've always tried to help people to maybe reframe emotions as not as instructions, I'm feeling this, I got to do this, but as information, right? And then as what I hear you're saying, Øystein, is that you're sort of self-aware, you're present, and you're thinking, okay, I'm feeling this, but I'm going to do this. You decide on the behavior, and the behavior in itself, it shapes the emotions. That's pretty much like kind of cognitive behavioral therapy. You can do the cognition to change the behavior, or what you're saying, you can use behavior to change your cognition.
Yes,
that's what I understand.
Yeah, and some people find me saying that as in I'm not listening to what my body is saying or what I'm feeling, and I'm saying no, I'm really listening to what my body is telling me. But if I, let's say, I'm feeling tired, okay, what do I need to do in order to feel less tired? I need to rest. I need to sleep. I need to eat better. I need to exercise. I need to do all the stuff. So when I'm having an emotion that I don't like, well, I'm trying to affect that emotion by doing something that's right for me. So I'm not saying that I'm always full gas. No, no, no. I'm listening to my body and then trying to do what's best for me in the long run. I'm not afraid of bad feelings, really not, but I really want to feel good most of the time. And then if I do the things I need to do in order to feel the way I want to feel, okay, then it's more likely that I can achieve more. It's not that I'm running around in a pink sky and feeling naive and optimistic all the time. No, 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 no.
No, no.
Like I told you, results are consequences of actions I take and choices I make. Also feelings. And you spoke about discipline. Many people told me like, hey, yeah, since you were an athlete, you need to have so much discipline. I was like, well, I don't think I have so much discipline. I think I'm quite ordinary, seriously. But discipline for me is something I need when I don't see the point of doing the things I need to do. Then I need to have discipline. But other than that, no. I have a lot of good reasons for the things that I'm doing. And sometimes it's hard work. Sometimes it's not so hard work, but it's often not because of the discipline. I don't have any much discipline. I use discipline when I'm told, hey, you need to clean the living room. Okay, then I need to put out some discipline. But most of the day, I work hard, but it's not discipline. And when I was a professional skier, it was not because of discipline. It was because of dedication, passion, excitement, enthusiasm. I just love for the game and love and really connection to the target. This is what I want to do. It's not discipline. And if you feel like you need to put so much discipline into your ordinary day, I think you're working against the wrong targets.
I think that's well said. I think that's a very salient point. So what I hear, I say, if I just rewind, so discipline for yourself wasn't something you needed as an infrastructure, because if you have the drive and the passion, that in itself is the rocket fuel for you to do what you got to do to achieve what you want to achieve. Yeah. But when those days were heavy, when whatever it was, then you had some sort of, as I understand your operationally defining discipline, is that you had a routine to fall back. You had a plan B, a specific plan, what to do. In case the drive wasn't there that day, for whatever reason, then you have a plan to kick into the discipline, which became your plan B to move forward. Is that what I'm trying to, I'm understanding?
Yeah, because there are many times you don't feel like it. There are many times you don't feel like it, but what you really want to feel like is being a person achieving the things you want to achieve. I think that's common for everyone. And then the days you don't feel like it, then you just got to start doing, because then you start moving towards the things you want to achieve. And then you will feel like it. Oh, I'm feeling like this. That's, and I think this correlates a lot with motivation. People say that motivation is a factor for starting. I'm saying, no, it's a consequence of doing the job. Inspiration can be a factor of getting the job or starting to do the job, but the motivation is a consequence of doing the job in order to move you. When I meet people who are not motivated, I ask them, what is your target? What is your goal? And most of the time people can't answer. And then I say, yeah, then I understand you are not motivated because you're just being busy. You're just busy being busy. And that's, I don't find working really, like working hard, it doesn't motivate me. Working hard towards something I want to achieve, oh, I could put in a lot of effort and I will feel motivated by doing the job.
So as I understand it, you know, when you're working towards something, obviously it sounds like you have a purpose. You have an end goal or an end state. And that end state may be an emotional state. As you said, I want to feel motivated, but I just don't start off motivated. What I have to do is trigger the behavior, but that behavior in itself is a passion. It's something on the horizon I move towards. And maybe that passion never gets fulfilled because it's constantly moving and then you keep moving, but it's goals you achieve. But the passion itself, that's the state you're trying to achieve. Is that what you're communicating?
Yeah. And also, I think you need to you heard so many people say, like, honor the process, honor the road. The road is more important than the goal itself. And it's, I totally agree. Why? Because I won a gold medal in the Olympics. And I don't know how many years I spent traveling that road and being able to win the Olympic gold medal. But it took maybe 8 years. 8 years. Every day, every single day. Like, trying to be as good as possible in order to have a chance of winning a gold medal. And I cannot say that every day I woke up really motivated, but like when I look back at those eight years, it was a period of pure enthusiasm. Like, seriously, I'm really proud and I'm really glad for the journey. But I won a gold medal and it was like one day. I spent one day as an Olympic champion. I spent 8 years traveling in order to get that gold medal. I was maybe there for one day. Maybe that's even too much. Maybe it's just 5 hours. You need to honor the process. If you don't like the process, your goal will never feel like it's worth it. I think you will just end up being really disappointed. And that's why I say you need to have a goal that you really, really, really want to achieve, because then you will actually learn to love the process. It's not about the goal. It's about the process, because you are on your way. Motivation. When I reached the gold medal goal, I felt unmotivated. Why? Because I didn't have anything to reach for anymore. I was already there. Like, I was there. If you climb the Mount Everest, I've never done that, but I think they feel the same way. If you are like all the kids, they really now want to have a summer vacation, and everyone is working so hard to get through the final exam, and then day one of a summer vacation, they wake up and they have nothing to do and they feel unmotivated. I think you need to honor the process.
It's feeling rudderless. So if we come back to that, so you spent 8 years of dedication fueled by drive and passion to achieve, you know, pretty much what may seem like the ultimate goal in your profession, in your discipline, then you achieved it. And then you felt kind of rudderless, or like that kid, the first day of summer is like, okay, what do I do now? I've got all this free time. What, obviously you were in a bit of a, I don't know, maybe a mind slump or in a little bit of a sort of a holding pattern. What did you do? How did you shift? I mean, was it a conversation you had? Did it take time to sort of settle with, you know, you've achieved everything you've achieved that you've set out for 8 years? I mean, how long did it take you to rekindle that passion, to find a new passion?
Honestly, I would say 4 years. And I think it's because I've never thought about how I would act when I got to my goal. Let me take you a step back. When you are working towards something, if it's an Olympic gold, it could be whatever, you are really active in your behavior. You are really active in your behavior. And when you reach your goal and you don't have a new one, you get very reactive in your behavior. And if you look around today, people, most people, they do as best they can. Like, seriously, people are working really hard. And I'm really impressed by most people. But there are not so many people who has a clear goal, a clear vision, like a real path. I'm on my way towards this. So I'm feeling they are more reactive than active. And once I got the gold medal, I spent 4 years reacting, just trying to hold on. And my performance slowly started to be worse and worse and worse. Because I stopped moving and I just reacted. And yeah, to what all the other people and all my other competitors did. And so I spent 4 years reacting. And then finally, one day I was lucky because I was thrown out of the national team of Norway. And then I was on bare ground. Like in business world, I lost my job. And then it's really easy to step back. Okay, I need a new goal and then start to act again. So I spent 4 years reacting. Now, when I'm working with people, I'm really trying to learn them the difference between reacting and acting. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of good things when it comes to reacting. There's a lot of good things in learning how to adjust behavior, in adjust everything. It's really good, and people are awesome. But when it comes to achieving, it's not reactions, it's actions. That's a totally different mindset in how you attack your day. I think most people are attacked by your day.
Well said. Well said. Yeah.
And so that is like, and this is, it's really common sense. And I think when like people hear it, it resonates with most people, but still we are, and this might be provoking to say, but I think we are taught up, we are born to be active, not in the meaning like a lot of movement, but in the way of being really active in order to how to, we can learn new stuff, to be curious, we are just active. And then when we grow up, we are learned to be reactive. And this can be, first of all, good. In some situations, it's really good. But in order to achieve, it can be bad, because you just learn to accept things as they are. And I think many people acknowledge that my situation isn't perfect, but it's just the way it's been forever. And I just have to accept it. I can't do anything about it. There is always something you can do, but you need to actively choose it. Achieving is not about reactions, because reactions are changes coming from the outside, and you just need to react upon it. You need to do development, and we talk about developing as the same as changing, but it's not the same. Changing is reactive, developing it's active. You need to choose it. Everyone can choose it, but you need to choose it, and you need to do. If you don't do, you will just react.
So, okay. So let me rewind here. So active mindset, as you said, that's what you're gunning for. That's what you try to help people to move towards. And so that active mindset means we need to make proactive choices. We need to pre-manage our situations to say, this is where I want to be, and these are some of the steps I need to get there. What I hear then, that's infused, or the passion has to be about learning, developing, growing, moving or exploring or discovering in a certain direction. And as you said, as children, we have that, but then we have that active mindset. But as adults, we may become complacent. You know, after university, we get our first job, then we get into a career, and then we kind of get, maybe, again, I talk in generalities, Einstein, we get stuck in that career. In that career, we may become apathetic or complacent. We reach a certain level where we are considered the experts or the gurus of what we do, and then we just settle. We become complacent, apathetic, and then, as you said, we are just reacting. Instead of us attacking the day attacks us. And that's, I think it's so well what you've articulated there, because for me, I see that a lot in corporations where, you know, people are constantly wanting to strive and grow, but sometimes there's no more room in that. And so maybe it is to shift the goal on the horizon. As you said, it's the honor of the process. But when you see someone who's kind of jaded, who is kind of complacent and such, how do you encourage him or her to find that, rekindle that passion, to go from reactive mindset to active mindset?
Oh, that's a hard question. I'm not trying to say that I have all the answers. I'm just saying that I'm quite good in asking questions. And then my job is to make sure that I will hold you accountable for your answers. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. But I think I find that the people have the most, for most of the time, they have the answers themselves. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to understand that knowing this isn't worth anything until you actually act upon it. Like, and there is written books about the power of the mind. The power of the mind, yeah, it's good, but it's nothing compared to the power of actually doing. the things you know you need to do. And sometimes maybe it takes discipline, but then I think you are working again towards the wrong target. I think some of the problem here is there are many problems. One big issue is time. We don't have the time, even though we live in a society who is really effective and we save a lot of time in everything we do compared to 50 years ago. Everything is faster. But I've never heard people say, now I've saved so much time that I will start spending some time on this or that. We just fill up the time we spend on other tasks, other activities, and we end up tired. And we try to, like, I think really you could do anything, but not at once. You need to do one thing at a time. And that's the problem. People are busy being busy. They are working on so many things at the same time, and you end up feeling like you don't manage anything. Like, so I think time is one thing. And secondly, energy. In order to achieve, you need time and you need energy. Why? Because you need energy to do. Thinking, that's perfect, but it doesn't move you. Just thinking. You could think whatever you want, but it doesn't count until you start acting upon it. So you need energy. And the sentence, oh, I have so much energy. I need to spend my energy on something. That's not common among grown-ups. We are, the most people I know, they are tired. Tired, that's good. But not if you're just tired because you are busy. So we need to do something in order to have energy and then set boundaries for our time so we could actually start moving upon one thing at a time. And then third, I think it's important to understand that we treat our goals as wishes. And what I mean that a goal is something that can happen if you do the things the goal requires. Wishes, somebody else has to do in order to your wish to come through. And so many people tell me, I wish I had the time. I wish I had this and I wish I had that. Yes, hopefully you are living with Santa Claus, because then your wish may come through. But I don't think, if it's really important for you, move it from the wish side of the table and over to the goal side of the table. And then you need to be prepared to start doing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, wishing is what we call wishful thinking in English. I mean, it's just like, it's nice, but you're not going to achieve it unless you, as you said, shift to goals. So I think that's so important what you said, you know, when you said that we can only kind of focus on one thing at a time. And that's basically the brain mechanics, unless it's a habit you're executing. If it's something new, then it is. You can only focus on one thing at a time. And what I hear often, and again, this is my own philosophy, people are talking about finding balance in life. Truly, if I'm thinking of a young professional, they've got small kids, they've got aging parents, they've got a profession, maybe their spouse or their girlfriend, their significant other is also a professional or what have you. I mean, they've got many moving parts. And for me to try to find balance is a road to insanity. I think at some point, what you're saying, what I said, you said you had to block off or create boundaries. And for me, the term I tend to use, which is along the same philosophy as yours, Stein, is trade-offs. Sometimes you need to make a trade-off. Sometimes I need to spend time with my kids and work is just going to have to work. It's just going to have to be on pause and everyone else is just going to have to wait. Or sometimes I need to dive into work and just work on that. Or sometimes on the weekends, I need to go for a long run and everything else has to be paused. And it's a trade-offs. And I think it sounds like being okay with that. And then you said your second point, which I think is so significant, is energy. And maybe time is, I need to be a little more disciplined, getting in bed a little bit earlier. So I get up a little earlier. So I have the time and the energy. And then I can go from wishful thinking to actually doing, you know, actually, what did you say? Acting instead of reacting. Is that what I understand?
Yeah. And again, the problem is that we are experts on reacting and we are experts in accepting the things as they are, have been. And we see the future with the past. The one you are today can't stand in your way of becoming the one you want to become tomorrow. But we see the future with the past. And it's, I totally agree. And many people say, yeah, and then in order to do what you are saying, like blocking off time and prioritizing, how can you prioritize if you don't know your goal? It's impossible. It's impossible to prioritize if you don't have your goal. And you can have different goals, yeah, for sure. But you need to sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and write down what is most important for you. And then you have maybe your job, you have your family, and you have your health. That's how I categorize it. And I just prioritize different goals for different type of activities during the day. And then people say, yeah, but then you have to sacrifice something. No, I'm not sacrificing. I'm not sacrificing any. All the things that I'm sacrificing is the things that are not on my list. And that's called prioritizing. That's totally different. People say, you need to sacrifice. If you feel like your day, again, if you feel like throughout your day you need to sacrifice a lot, you are working towards the wrong goal and you will never be fulfilled when you reach them. But people say, when I just get this, then I will start doing this. When I achieve this, then I will be happy. You will not be happy. You will be tired. And that doesn't correlate with happy.
No, I think that's what I hear you saying is like someone could have the mind talk where they're saying, I'm sacrificing this, I'm sacrificing that. I mean, just, you know, linguistics, the words we choose will affect the different networks in our brain, right? And just saying sacrifice, it means you're giving something up, that you're risking something. But sometimes just shifting to it, I'm investing time in this today, or in this hour, I invest time in this. So, and then there's, when you invest, there's a dividend. It's not I'm spending time or it costs me this. But if you invest time, again, it sounds like semantics, but the words we choose, I completely concur with you, Einstein. The words we choose will have, you know, will have an effect on how we see things. Like one simple example is the difference between anxiety and excitement. Both of them have the identical physiological markers. One person will say, I'm jazzed. I'm stoked to do this. Another person's got, I'm going to get burned. I'm going to burn out because of this or whatever they say. Identical situation, identical physiological markers. But one person saying I'm sacrificing, the other person saying I'm investing. Is that what I'm understanding you're saying?
Yeah. And I think also, I think it's important to understand that just in order to get into this mindset, even though the mindset itself is not worth anything, I think you need to give yourself a possibility to succeed. And what do I mean by that? Normally, we get inspired to doing this when things are bad. Like, oh, things are bad. I need to move away from this. And then we start adding on trainings in order to get into the right mindset. I think that's, it can be good, but also be aware that you need to spend energy in order to be able to have an active mindset, an active way of attacking your day. And then you need to create space to get that energy, to have that time. So the first thing you could start doing is to stop doing a whole lot of things. Where could you set your boundaries so you could really have the time and the energy in order to achieve? And people often think that, just, you heard all about the grit and everything, that just keep on working, keep pushing. You need to work hard. Yeah, you need to work hard, but not on everything at the same time. And you have time for this. I'm sure you have time, but you need to set boundaries so you are not caught up with all the distractions. Distractions, what is it? Actions you take that will not get you closer to your goal. It will always take time and it will always cost you energy. I'm not saying that distractions always are bad, but they will never move you towards your goal. And we are experts in using time and energy on distractions, which will stop you from getting where you want to go. Actions, things you do in order to move you to where you want to go. Distractions, things you do which will cost you energy and will not move you towards where you want to go. And we are experts. You have never seen any football match, cross-country ski race, track and field competition, where someone is running down and doing their things, and then the cell phone calls, and they pick up the phone like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of busy. But what was it? Like, I'm kind of in the middle of a race. Why? Because they are doing their things, focused on this thing right now, and the distractions, of course, they are there, but they don't mind. But metaphorically speaking, people are on that competition every single day, doing their things, and then the phone rings, or the colleagues comes in, or an email drops up, or they just... And it's never any good. Just spend time, and your effort and your performance will go down.
I don't want to layer it with sort of little of the brain science, because what you're saying is right on the money. As you said, to use your vernacular, to use your terminology, distractions is when the day attacks us. But if we become active and we focus our attention, then it's us attacking the day. We have that active mindset. And, you know, attention itself is a finite resource. You know, how we focus our attention, there's only four spectrums. We focus externally, it could be broad or narrow, or we focus internally, broad or narrow. But in itself, attention is driven by the quality of our sleep, by the glucose in our system. And the quality of attention is going to be based upon how self-aware we are and where we want to focus it. As you said, a passion, a goal, you know, deciding not to let ourselves be distracted by all the bells and whistles in life. And the thing is, we never run out of attention, but the quality of attention just becomes less and less. And as you said, if we're not cognizant, or if we're not setting boundaries to all the distractions, it literally eats at the quality of our attention, and we get distracted. As you said, we just become, I think you said it so well, we're just got caught up in the busyness of the day. We're not really busy, we're just caught up in the busyness, right? We don't have focused attention, such as an athlete or a top executive or a scientist or a student trying to achieve something, whatever, a single mom or a single dad trying to get somewhere with their kids or something. So I completely concur with what you're saying.
And I think, yeah, that's a really interesting topic, because I think people say that, hey, you are not focused. That's like, you are focused, but you are focused on the wrong things. Your focus is shifting. And I think we are experts in shifting focus. If you compare today's kids or today's grown-up with the people from 200 years ago, we are experts in shifting focus. And that's fine. But when you understand that in order to achieve something, you need to have focus on one thing for a long period of time and spend a lot of energy on this one, oh, then it can be troublesome, because you are not trained. You are training shifting focus. People are watching television and the cell phone at the same time. We are speaking to each other and looking at the cell phone. We are shifting focus all the time. And people might think, hey, you are not focused, but you are focused, but on so many different things in just a short amount of time at a time. So I think you need just to practice to be focused. And that's, people say, mindfulness, or you need to start meditation. Or what is meditation? What is mindfulness? It's just focus on one thing. When I'm not into meditation at all, but if you have a measurement of my brain activity when I'm running, I'm 100% sure it's quite close to meditation. Why? Because I'm just running. That's what I do. People have, we say sleep on it. Why do we say sleep on it? Because then your brain actually has the environment and the peace to be creative, to solve problems. But in today's society, where we shift focus all the time, we are running on fifth gear all the time. We don't have time to be creative. We just have been time to be reactive. And that's not the perfect environment from my perspective. And also, I think it's important, like I'm really into the, you need to have a clear goal. And I really do think it's good to have a vision or some pathway to go. It doesn't always need to be materialistic. I think it could be more importantly how you actually want to be. Like, how do I want to be during the day? Have that active in your forehead when you are stepping out of your front door and into the world. But I think knowing the goal itself is not worth so much. You need to know where you are and how you're going to get there. I usually use Rubik's Cube as an example, because many people have tried to solve the Rubik's Cube. And more people have tried than succeeded. It's not because we don't know the goal. We everybody understands the meaning of the Rubik's Cube. But if you don't know the recipe, you will be caught up being busy. You just move the bricks around and you hope that you are moving towards your goal. And you cannot, after a day's work, you cannot say, like, really, did I work on distractions or actions? You just worked. And I think I use Rubik's Cube as a reminder. Take yourself the time to not only know the goal, but break it down into steps, small steps. Rubik's Cube is really simple to solve, but you need to know the steps. And I think it's the same in your day. You need to break down the steps so you just can start doing actions and not being caught up in the distractions.
It's about doing the action and not getting caught up in the distractions. Well said. In the first part of the episode, we explored the concept of the consequences of choices, actions, and the lack thereof. Eysen emphasizes the importance of making decisions based on how we truly feel, rather than just doing or going through the emotions. He suggests that if we find ourselves needing excessive discipline for a particular task, it might indicate that we are pursuing the wrong target. While passion and drive serve as the initial motivation to pursue our goals, discipline can become crucial when our enthusiasm wanes. Then the discussion then shifted towards the significance of honoring the process in order to achieve our desired outcome. Einstein shares his personal experience of shifting his mindset from merely hoping for success to actively taking the steps towards it. This transformation took him 4 years to accomplish. He also reflects on the consequences of achieving his goal without having a new one in sight. He became reactive rather than active, and his performance suffered as a result. This distinction between being active and reactive is highlighted when Eysen emphasized the importance of self-awareness and making conscious choices based on our values. He notes that changing is merely a reaction to circumstances, while developing, well, that involves planning and actively making choices. In part one, we also discussed the three essential elements for achievement: time, energy, and action. Eysen cautions against falling into the trap of busyness and treating goals as mere wishes. He stresses the need for setting boundaries and avoiding distractions that divert us from our goals. Time and energy can work in our favor, but only if we maintain focused attention and have a clear understanding of our current position and the path we need to take. As we prepare to delve into the second part of this episode, it's essential to keep in mind the significance of conscious decision-making, self-awareness, and the proper utilization of time and energy. These themes, as discussed by Eysen, will continue to shape our understanding of personal development and goal achievement. So let's now continue this fascinating conversation with Eysen as we slip into the stream into part two. And I think that's so well said. It's taking the time. Again, it's about investing the time. As you said, people may say that I don't have time to do that. Well, the thing is, then you're just running. You're just running without any direction or purpose. Whatever, a rudderless boat, or, you know, just blowing which way the wind goes, whatever. But whatever metaphor you want to use. And I think it is just that. It's sitting down. As you said, you don't have all the answers, but how you help yourself shift mindset and how you help others shift mindset is the quality of the questions.
Yeah. And also, an add on to that is when you asked me, how long did it take before you got out of the zone after
the slump?
I used 4 years. Mm. And I wish I could tell the story in a different way. Like, I wish I could tell the story. I spent some days, or I spent maybe a year, half a year, and then I decided to make a change. Decided to, like, this is not going to happen. But I did not decide. I was forced to it because I lost my job. And when you are forced into making changes, ooh, then it's quite easy. But the opportunity to take control, I had it every single day for 4 years. But me, as everybody else, was an expert on reacting, accepting, just adjust. And that's good. But in order to achieve, it can be bad. So it's easier when you are forced to do it than if you, than when you're not forced, but you can do it.
So if I come back to that, you know, as you said, in a sense, you lost your job. When you got dropped off the national team, it's like someone getting fired or just losing their job.
Yeah.
And they get laid off. And so they are in a slump. They're in a more than likely not in a good mental place. And so they are facing the storm. And a lot of people see the storm and they just kind of hunker down and they just kind of, they try to avoid the storm. And sometimes it's hard to find motivation. It's hard to find the behavior to move through that because you just feel completely gutted or you're just running on fumes, Einstein. I mean, I know you don't have a recipe or the perfect answer and it comes down to the individual, but how does someone face the storm? How does someone find the resilience, the fortitude and the tenacity to pick up one step at a time and move forward?
Oh, I can only speak for myself, but I have to be honest that the 4 years I spent I was on a national team. I was a professional athlete. I don't think I was the worst person out there in order to do the things I needed to do. But I only did the things that were required of me and never the things that was best for me. And that really influenced how I felt. I did not feel fulfilled. I know I was just doing the things that was thrown at me. I was just reacting. And in order to feel motivated, I needed one to get in the control. It's like feeling like I'm in charge here. I have the control. And also setting one is the clear goal, but actually start to doing the things that the goal required. Because my strategy for the 4 years after my Olympic goal was, I'm hoping this is enough. And hope, that's a really good thing. But hope is a really bad strategy. After 2014, when I lost my job, I stopped hoping and I started doing. And then I got proof that what I'm doing is actually moving me towards where I want to go. I actually started to have proof that I'm improving. And my first step was to stop. What is most important for me? What is most important for Einstein? And I come up with a list, three things. One, time. I divide it into time. Time with my family. Time to train. Time to rest. Those three things was the things that I was supposed to use my time on. Everything else, say no. And once you start saying no, you also start saying yes to yourself and the things that you actually value. So from one day to another, I went from feeling really broken into feeling really motivated, feeling really alive, feeling fulfilled. I was not a better person or a skier or from one day to another, but my feelings changed. And then when I felt good, my performance on all scales, as a skier, as a husband, as a father, just rapidly improved. And then from 2014 until I retired in 2019, I was the best skier I've ever been. But it's just starting with making that active change. And I'm really honest when I say the years between 2010, where my Olympic gold medal was won, and 2014, I was just reacting. And sometimes the results were good. Sometimes I achieved good results, but I never felt any success because I was just reacting all the way and I was just feeling tired. So even though you are chasing a good result, the results are funny, but feelings is not only correlated to the success you make on a result list or money or business or whatever. It's a feeling you have when you wake up in the morning and go to sleep at bed at night.
It's a complicated, you know, concoction of different, you know, chemicals, and they play out in different ways. So you're saying you went from hoping to doing, and through the doing, obviously from the doing, you are thrown into experience. And that experience was the feedback cycle or feedback mechanism that showed you, yeah, you're taking a step in the right way. And that feedback loop allowed you to keep moving forward, and that fueled your motivation, that fueled your passion again. And then, as you said, you decided to, I've only got so much time, and the three major things in my life is family, is training, and it's rest. If I rest, I'm more there for my family, I'm more there for myself. And as you said, it was a trade-off, but you decided to, by saying no to others, I'm saying yes, yes to my kids, yes to my family, yes to myself. And so I also understand what I'd like to come back. I always like challenging people. So
I love it. Bring it on. Okay.
So you said from 2010 to 2014, you were kind of broken and you were kind of hoping for things, but then you made this leap. You bridged the hoping to doing. What did you specifically do, nuts and bolts, to shift from hoping to doing? I mean, what was it? What was the catalyst? What was the spark that allowed you to bridge that chasm, that abyss between hoping and doing?
I think it's a good question. I think during those 4 years, I was really aware that this is not perfect. I was really aware this is not what I dreamt of. And no matter the results, I know that I have a bad feeling. Like I'm not feeling good. I'm saying one thing and I'm doing another thing. I'm saying that I want to be a good father, but I'm traveling with my team. I'm saying that I prioritize the skiing, but I'm attending to a lot of parties I don't want to be, just because it's possible. I felt it every single day for 4 years. I felt this is not perfect, but I'm hanging on. I got a lot of grit. Let's do this. And then when I got kicked out of the team, I didn't have any income. I didn't have anyone who provided me with a job offer or any. It was just me. And I had a family and I had me. And I was forced to take a choice, an active choice. Okay, where is your path going to lead from now on? And it starts now, not tomorrow, not next week. It starts today. You want to continue as a skier? Okay, then you need to improve your performance. You want to stop skiing and find a job? You want to do this or you want to do that? You need to choose. No one will choose for you, but you will feel the consequence no matter what you choose. So I was on my bathroom. I looked at myself in the mirror, and this is the typical story, right? But seriously, I just looked myself in the mirror. Who you want to be? Are you a skier? And I felt with every fiber of my body, yeah, I'm a skier. Yeah, I think I have more. I love skiing. I'm really passionate about it. Okay, then you need to stop doing the things you're doing right now and start doing the things that will improve your skiing, because you will not make any money by skiing the way you're doing right now. That's one thing. Second, how can you become a better skier? And what's the most important thing for you? My family. No matter how much I train, if I feel like a lousy father and a lousy husband, I will not be able to, one, ski or perform at my top level. And second, even though if you win a race, you will still feel like a lousy father and a lousy husband. You need to start taking time, spending time with your family. So it was simple, super simple. But that's just what I did. Those two things, decide to spend time on the things that were most important for me. And then I just started doing that. Say no to everything. And from one day to another, it shifts. Like the feeling in my body just shifted. And now I use that feeling every time I come to a choice where something maybe sounds tempting. This sounds fun. But is it fun or is it valuable? Is it more valuable spending time with your family, working on the things that I love to do now, and taking care of my health? And very often the answer is no. No, I don't have any numbers of how many TV shows I've turned down. But attending a TV show, a lot of people really dream about that. And I will not tell you that's a wrong dream. But for me, I value time with my children and family more than attending on a TV show. And I just say no, and I feel good about it. And I don't feel like I'm sacrificing anything. I'm just prioritizing the things that's important to me.
And back to the sort of trailhead of my question between broken and motivated from hoping to doing, you know, what I hear is a man who kind of, you know, as you said, maybe it's quite common. You looked in the mirror and there in the stark light of day, you had to make a choice. And I think sometimes most, if I can just use the metaphor of a storm, I think a lot of us are afraid of a looming storm. We can see the dark clouds. We can see what it means. And we know if we go through that storm, we're going to get buffeted and we're going to get bruised and we're going to be bashed around a little. But I think sometimes the storm in itself, it's a wake-up call. It's a teacher to tell us that, as you said, what did you say? You said there, I felt a shift in my body. You know, we call that embodied cognition. You became very self-aware of that shift. And what I, in a sense, what I hear is someone who decided to take agency, to take control, to take back autonomy for that. And I think you also said, look, my income has dried up. You weren't assuming or speculating anymore. You had moved to a strategic thing. Okay, this is the cold hard light of day. I literally don't have currency coming into my account. Now I have to look at the facts of where I'm at and have to make some cold hard choices. And the other one I hear is you're not constantly focused on the outcome, but you started shifting to the actions I can take, the effort. And so for me, those three things of autonomy and certainty and effort, that's almost a prescription for mindset. And sometimes, yeah, you got to make hard choices and they're tough choices. But that shift you made, you literally felt that feeling. And I think it comes back to what we talked about before, between, as the example I used, between anxiety and excitement. It's a shift. What had happened is you had shifted. What it sounds like, please correct me if I'm wrong, Yesine, you had shifted the mind talk. You had shifted the narrative you were telling yourself. Is that what I understand?
Yeah. And I felt like I took back the control.
Mm-hmm.
I took back the control. People say that you need to have so much discipline or you need to have so good habits. It's, no, you need to be aware. You need to take action. You need to... just start building good routines. But I think people mix, like, for example, habits and routines. People say, hey, as an athlete, you had really awesome habits. Like, no, I had some good habits, some bad habits, but what I had was really good routines. And I think people mix up routines and habits. Habits, things you do that you don't think about. It just happens on autopilot. When I'm training, when I'm working, I never found myself suddenly running through the woods, like really fast. And oh, here I was. It's always a decision to get in my training gear, put on my running shoes, getting out of the forest, and then start running as hell. It's always an active choice I take. It's good routines, not habits. And during the 4 year period of time, I did not have bad habits. I just had bad routines. I knew I was not doing the things that was perfect, but I just accepted them as bad routines and hoping that it will be okay, that it will turn out okay. Like you said, the storm, when you're facing a storm, you could think positive, you could think negative. I don't care. It will not change the fact that you are in the middle of a storm. You are still in the fucking storm, and you need to think right. And what is the difference between thinking positive, negative, or right? Thinking right is, what do I need to do in order to change this situation? And that's a whole nother mind game. That's a whole nother story. And I think people, you think positive if you want to, but be aware that thinking positive will never change the situation you're in.
And again, I completely concur with that. You know, positive affirmations or positive thinking that are not based on the facts and the realities that you may be facing, that comes back to that third point you're talking about. You talked about time, you talked about energy, and you talked about wishing. That's just wishful thinking, you know, positive affirmations. Because sometimes, and again, this is something I've addressed a number of times on this podcast, sometimes you're in a hard situation. And sometimes, any way you cut that situation, it's hard. And maybe it's just a shit situation, but it's not all the positive thinking is not going to get you through that. Sometimes it's constructive thinking. And what you've spoken a lot to today, Einstein, is the ability to have self-awareness, to be self-aware of your thinking, feeling, and doing. And you use the doing to shift your feeling, which shifts the narrative in your head. And as you said, I felt that embodied cognition where I went from hoping to doing. You made that shift.
Yeah, and I think why is this important? And then hopefully your listeners will listen now. If you could totally disagree with everything I've said, but this is important. Why is this important? Because you will feel the consequences of your choices. No matter what you say, no matter what you do, you will feel the consequences. People think about confidence. Like in Norwegian, we say selvtillit, it's self-trust. Self-trust. You need to give yourself more reasons to trust yourself, to disbelieve in yourself. And how do you do that? Just by planning an action or planning a certain behavior and start doing the behavior or doing the actions when it comes in your calendar without any distractions. And if you do that, you will build your confidence. And also, when you start doing the things you have planned to do in order to achieve the things you want to achieve, you will get better. That's why we see people who are really good and think, they are confident. Yes, they are confident because they've done and put in the work in order to be so good. And that will fuel their confidence and also fuel their performance. And why is this important? Because how you feel about yourself, like your confidence will confidence is going down the road together with self-image, self-feeling, belief in yourself. They are walking down the path and you will feel the consequence. And I'm not saying that you should listen to me, but I'm 100% sure that whatever you do as your next action, you will feel the consequence.
Well said. You know, as you said, you have to feel about yourself, to have the positive self-image, to have the self-confidence, to have the self-esteem. In order to do that, from my clinical experience, you need to have self-compassion. And my experience is, with a lot of us, we turn on the compassion faucet for everyone else, our kids, our significant others, our friends, our colleagues, what have you. But when it comes to ourselves, we tend to turn it off. Maybe not all the way drip, 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 but it's not really serving us. And what we lash ourselves is with self-flagellation, with self-critical thoughts, with self-doubt. How important was self-compassion for you to bridge from the hoping to the doing, to understand that your income is drying up, your career, if you continue down this road of skiing, is going to be in the dumpster? How important was self-compassion as part of that self-awareness you had?
I think it's a really good question. I think that changed also, that was a switch, because when you win the Olympic gold medal, suddenly you realize that you could be the best. But that's a really hard premise. That's a really hard level of achievement. That's a really hard ambition to be the best. And once you have that ambition, it's really easy to be really self-critical. It's really easy to be really almost self-sabotaging yourself, because you see everybody else and you see their superpowers and you feel, I'm not even close. So I just, during those 4 years after the Olympic gold medal, I was in a downgoing spiral of self-criticism and self-sabotage. Once I was kicked out of the national team, I could let go of the being the best part and then start focusing on doing my best. And that's a whole different story. And then you could start treating yourself with love, with compassion, with, okay, you are more than good. You are more than good. As a skier, you just got proven you will never be good enough. But as a person, you are good. And I think we need to understand the difference. I think no one will be good enough when it comes to what you actually do. You can always improve. I won a gold medal. I was never good enough. But as a person, I am good, period. It's no competition. And once I understood that, it shifted my whole mindset or framework. Perception of the things that I'm doing. Hey, you are just going to do as good as you can. And you will always improve. And there's only one way to improve, and that's by practicing. But people, again, we wish we have better confidence. I wish I had better self-image. I wish I had better self-esteem. I wish I believed in myself. You stop wishing and start giving yourself proof of this. And I assure you, one, you will feel it too. I'm 100% sure that your performance also will improve.
Again, there's so much said. I just want to unpack that because I'm learning a lot from you. You know, what I hear is instead of wishful thinking, it's the ability to move it from I wish this to I'm willing to do this. Because once you're willing to do that, obviously then you have the dedication, the passion to move it forwards. And as you said, as a professional athlete in that sphere of your life, when you were wearing that title, maybe part of what I hear is like you were comparing yourself to others, right? And I think maybe whether we call it an athletic mindset or just a mindset itself, I think sometimes life for me has always been sort of like a solo sport, like climbing or playing golf or running. I do a lot of running. I do a lot of climbing. And for me, there's no one to compare to. And it's just, I'm comparing it to myself. And once I take away all the noise that saying those people are better than me, yeah, sometimes I go there, but then I see how many people I'm actually better than. So I have a healthy comparison, and that in itself allows me just to self-regulate. And I have that compassion for myself. And as you said, you never really achieve the top, because once you achieve the top, you start sliding again, and then you have to climb back up. We don't stay static. Life is about either growing or sliding, right? And so for me, when I try to compare myself, and I'm not always good at doing this, but if I just look at myself, I'm in a much better place. I'm in a much better headspace. Is that what I hear you're saying about yourself, Isaiah?
Yeah, 100%. And there are so many things here. First of all, we are living in a comparison society. We compare ourselves with others all the time. And that's perhaps it can be a good driver to perform better. But usually it's the opposite. It's just a driver to feel worse. Why? Because we compare ourselves with the people who are better than us. We think everyone is better, and we look up when we compare ourselves, never down. We can never compare to the people we think we are better than. We always compare us to someone we think are better than us, and that leaves us with, you are not good enough. You are not worthy. You are not this or that. And that's one thing. And the second is, it's really uncertain, because if you put your value on you, on how you think the other people think of you or how other people perform, it's really uncertain, because you never know how they will, one, think of you, and second, perform. So we need to start comparing you with you. I'm comparing me with me. And of course, that's but it's impossible to say when you're doing a sport. Yeah, I know I'll have a result, but sometimes I finished fourth in Vasalop. Vasalop is the world's biggest ski race. I did my very best. Like, seriously, I did super good. I was fourth. I did my very best. Should I be disappointed because I was only fourth, first loser? Or should I be proud?
Loser. Like, exactly.
I've traveled home from the Olympics. I told you, I won a gold medal at the Olympics. It was a relay. In the individual sprint, I was sixth. I was the last guy in the final. You know, I had a crash in that final. I had a crash. Some guy from Kazakhstan, he stepped on my ski, so we crashed, and I ended up finishing last. It's one of the most proud moments of my life. The result was not the one I dreamt of, but my performance was top level. I was my very best that day, a day that I've been working on and towards for 6 years. I did not reach the result I wanted, but I performed as I was trained for. And just prepare you with you. And there are so many things around the result you cannot control, which will influence. Don't look at the result itself. Look at you and how you act, how you perform, what you do, and how you feel.
I think, again, you're making a lot of really astute points. And for me, they really resonate. You know, self-compassion comes back down to a sense of self-worth also. I mean, it's multifaceted. But what I hear you saying is the result is don't get fixated on the outcome. Like in that ski race, unfortunately, the other competitor stepped on your ski and that kind of blundered everything up. And if you had been measuring your worth, your confidence or your self-worth based upon the outcome of getting a gold in that race, then you would have been completely trashed. The self-compassion would have been totally off. Where I hear is a man who decided, you know what, it's about the effort, because the outcome is so far out there. There's so many variables in play. You don't even see the variables in play, such as someone stepping on your ski. I'm sure you weren't expecting that on some sort of turn, but it happened, and that shifts the outcome. And so for me, that's so salient, because a lot of what I try to help work with people, and obviously with myself, is that it's okay to compare yourself to people above you, because that shows you what you can achieve. But that's an outcome, and that's a possible permutation of an outcome. It's not an exact thing. So you got to kill your darlings, maybe something. And so if you spend 20% of your attention, as you said, the quality of your attention, focusing on the horizon, on the outcome where you want to get, but then you focus on the 80% on the effort, what you can do here and now, because that will pay it off. Then you're telling me, I hear someone who's self-aware about his thinking, feeling, and doing, focusing more on the doing to shift the feeling. I hear someone who puts on the self-compassion that, you know what, Aysen, you'll learn, you'll grow from this. In that 4-year hiatus you had, you went from hoping to doing, but that required you to have self-compassion. What I also hear is a man who shifted to self-efficacy. Self-efficacy mean what you did. You took agency. You took control over what things and autonomy. You started dealing with the facts and the certainty, what you were certain about. And again, you focused on the effort. And that combination of what I hear, for me, in a sense, defines this active mindset that you so eloquently spoke about, the reactive and the active. And if you have that active mindset, as you said, I really like that term, you attack the day. It's not the day attacking you. Why? Because you put distractions aside. Not all the time, but you try the best you can. You try to mitigate as many distractions as this. You decide where I'm going to devote my time. You said my family, my training, and my rest. And that's what it is. And yes, I say no to others, but I say yes to me and my family. And that in itself, I mean, they're all different elements, but they all contribute to this person that you've evolved into. Is this what I kind of understand you're communicating? I'm trying to capture everything in a few sentences here.
When you spoke, I was like, I need to ask him if he could write this down and send it to me in letter, because this I want to read every day. If people told me this in my funeral, I'll be a happy dead man. Like, yeah, that's what I'm trying to communicate. And when you're sitting in a podcast like this, it seems like him. This is a man who's everything, is doing everything right, never does wrong, never has any struggles, always shifting his actions into the right ones, always feeling good. No, I'm working with the same mechanisms as everybody else. I feel struggle. I feel less worthy. I feel sometimes like I'm self-sabotaging. I have my battles. Everyone does. And I think that's what's growing is, no matter where you are on the ladder, it's always taking one step at a time, and the steps are the same. It feels the same if it's for me, for you, or any. I don't care where you are on the ladder. The ladder is, you need to climb one step at a time, but never confuse a ladder with an elevator, because then you will just be standing hoping that you will get up, and you will never get up.
And again, it comes back down to investing action, investing effort, and making, you know, making that call, making that step, just engaging with yourself, right? And as you said, those who are fortunate to have you as a consultant, as a sparring partner, as a coach, as a motivator, whatever you want to call yourself, because you create, as you said at the top of this conversation, you become the external commitment. You know, when we sometimes promise to ourselves, we can renege on ourselves. And so sometimes it's okay to ask for help, to seek someone who can take us to the next level, however that may show up in your profession, your discipline, or your life. And I think that's, you know, that's what I try to get on this podcast. You know, having a person of your caliber and understanding the experiences, talking about your vulnerabilities, your flop-ups, but how you've climbed back up and how you still slide sometimes, but how you get back up on the horse and you start climbing again. I mean, that in itself, this interview is great to have that, because we pick at so many different elements here.
Yeah, people have a tendency to say like leader programs or development programs or podcasting or inspirational speeches. Does it work? Like that's not the question. Does it work? It's you need to start doing. And then you can tell me if it's working or not. And if it's not working, then we are doing the wrong things. And we just have to adjust the doing. But the podcast itself is not working. Sorry. And the leader program itself, it's not working. It's not the contain in the podcast, or that's nothing. The doing is everything. And there are so many different methods. There are so many strategic thoughts out there. There are so many books about how to achieve this or that, but none of them will work unless you start doing. And I think everyone will work if you do the things that's in the book, in the program, in the podcast. I think every one of them will work, but not if you do everything at once, all of them at once, and not if you just do it for one day. Because if you do something for one day, training, for example, you will not get as fast as Usain Bolt by sprinting today. You will wake up tomorrow and you will feel sore. You will put in a lot of effort today and you will wake up tomorrow and you will feel worse than today. It's just because it's outside your comfort zone. Something new, it's growing and growing. You need, then there is some sort of resilience. There is some sort of, this is hard. Yes, it's hard. But I think the alternative is also hard. Just going around reacting. That's to me, it's harder.
Well, days are numbered. And the question is, what do you want to do with those days? Whether you do something, whether you engage with the day or disengage with the day, as you said at the top, again, the conversation, those are the results, right? And at the end of the day, we have to take ownership for those results, whether they're something we want or what we don't want. And the question is, what do we do with that to the next day? And when, as you said, you know, you train one day, so that's the training, but then the next day you're sore, you've challenged yourself mentally or physically, but then you need a rest day. You need to recuperate and so you can come back to the game. And it's not constantly the grind or the hustle as we were talking about. I mean, that's just foolish mindset if you're constantly grinding and hustling, because then that just leads you back from the active back to the reactive day. Is that what I understand, right? You don't take the time.
Yeah, you will. I'm not the David Goggins guy, even though I like David Goggins as a crazy inspirational guy. But I think you need to the work-life balance thing. You know, you need energy, and sometimes you need to slow down. You need to go to bed early. You need to maybe have a walk. You need to just do the things that your body tells you you need in order to have the energy to spend on the things you really do want. It's not about working hard. It's about working consistently over time and to have that, to understand that you need to do this in Norwegian we call it bærekraft. I'm not sure what you call it.
Sustainability.
Sustainability.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
to sustain it.
Is your day today sustainable? for 15 years. If the answer is yes, perfect, keep going.
Mm.
If you really feel that the answer is no, this is not sustainability for me, then you need to stop. Take a step back. Look at what you could stop doing. Look at things you can't start doing in order to make it sustainable, because you will feel the consequence. I'm 100% sure.
And I concur. And sometimes you don't have to have always the 15-year goal in mind. Maybe it's a 2-year position you're moving into. And within those 24 months, things will shift, things will change, but just go for the short ride for a little. But is it something you want to do? Is it, as you said, is it linked to your passions, right? Back to what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. And the doing. And
the doing.
There are certain things I've seen, like people who are good achievers and people who are not so good in achieving. Not in the meaning of better people or not good people. Like, people are good, period. Mm. But in order to achieve, then I see some differences. And one is, the people who are good in achieving, they do, and then that will affect how they feel. Not how they feel will affect what they do. And the second is, people who achieve are good at starting and finishing. People who are not so good, they have a problem of starting and very often problem of finishing, but they still hope that they will achieve. But that's a bad strategy.
And I think it comes back to what you're saying. It's the quality of the questions. It's the questions you ask to help people take ownership, because one man's solution is not going to be another man's solution. And they have to find their own bespoke, tailored way of doing things that works for them.
A really difficult but really important question.
Mm.
Like, if you're boiling all this down to one question, is, are you alive or are you living?
Mm.
And I think people who are reactive more often say, I'm alive, than living.
I think that's a great place to, you know, for someone to think about. It's a crossroads. And maybe that's the question they need to awaken the self-awareness and then trigger the self-compassion about how they want to learn, grow, and develop, and that it's okay to stop up. And then it triggers the self-efficacy. What can I take action on? What can I do? You know, where do I have control? What are the facts? And then, because that one particular question, am I alive or am I living? That's a great question. It's a positive Pandora's box, because then it will stimulate other deeper thinking. And I think, as you said, I take time to rest. And maybe that rest time for all of us, we can sit down, as you said, with a pen and paper, and just write some of the questions we want to ask ourselves first, and then spend time answering it. And to answer, not in sort of abstract terms, but try to operationally define those answers so they are action-based. So you move from the reactive to the action. Yes, the Rubik's Cube. The Rubik's Cube, exactly.
Yeah, because it's like, I want to start living. Yeah, that's perfect. How does living look like? What do you need to do in order to feel like you are living and not just being alive? Okay, break it down into small steps. And the first thing can be to stop doing a whole lot of things so you could have more time to create energy so you can start living. Because living costs energy and requires time.
I think that's a perfect place to put a period, or maybe a dot, 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 to be continued conversation at some later date, Einstein. I mean, I definitely want to get you on again, because I think there is a part two to this conversation, and we'll leave the audience hanging a little, like a cliffhanger, till next time. But Einstein, I just really wanted to really thank you for your time and sharing your philosophies, your experience, your vulnerabilities, to show that even someone of your caliber and what you've achieved, that, you know, you're no different from the rest of us, that you have your own struggles, that you have to grow, and sometimes you slide and then sometimes you grow again. But that, you know, it's sometimes hearing people's stories, it really helps us to help see that, okay, you know, self-compassion, I can also learn, I can also adapt. So, Einstein, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you yourself. It's been an honor. And I really do love this. I think it's really inspiring. So, and you ask great questions. So thanks. Really inspiring. I will now go out and I will have a run and I will reflect on the conversation. That's what I do. And thank you.
Thank you, Øystein. Well, folks, I have to say that was truly a fascinating and exhilarating conversation with Øystein. You know, in the second part, he delves into the essential journey of finding the motivation to move forward. Øystein shared his personal strategy of transitioning from hoping to doing, emphasizing that hoping alone is a flawed and ineffective approach. He discovered the power of becoming aware of his true values, which include spending time with his family, training, and taking care of his health. By consciously deciding to prioritize these important aspects and taking action, a shift occurred within him. The feeling in his body changed, providing him with a guide when faced with tempting choices. He now asks himself if something is not only fun but also valuable, considering its worth compared to spending time with his loved ones, maintaining his well-being, and more often than not, the answer is no. Øystein also highlighted the significance of self-compassion in his journey from hoping to doing. He moved away from self-criticism and comparing himself to others, instead focusing on his own progress, his actions, his performance, and his effort. His self-worth became a reflection of his consistent actions and dedication, allowing for sustainability over time. The question now he poses to us is, are we merely alive or are we truly living? By aligning our actions with our values, we can often engage in life and experience a sense of fulfillment. I think part of what we can draw from this fascinating conversation is that by emphasizing the importance of conscious decision-making, self-awareness, self-compassion, and the alignment of our actions with our values, it is through these deliberate choices that we can transform hope into action and create a life that is both meaningful and fulfilling. And I just want to send a big personal thank you for Øystein for his time and his generosity of sharing his thoughts, his experiences, and vulnerabilities with us today. Øystein, personal thank you from me to you. I hope we get to have another conversation real soon, because I think there is definitely a part two to this. Well, folks, that brings us to a tail end of another episode, another week. And as a call to action, if you could please recommend this podcast to friends, to colleagues, to family members, you're doing me a huge solid. And if you could take the time, please post on your social media feeds this particular episode and maybe what you pulled from it. But thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be part of your week. And until next week, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.